Good afternoon. I call to order this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee, and I'd ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Here.
Vice Chair Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Here.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Present.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Lucero.
Chair Dabney has an awesome wall color.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Present.
And I'll call again Representative Haley. Did you just join us?
Yes, I am here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. A quorum is present. Our first item of business today is approval of our minutes from our February 3rd meeting. Representative Katiza Watoon, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move approval of the minutes from, February 3rd meeting. Thank you.
Representative Katiza Watoon moves approval of our minutes from February 3rd, 2021. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 3rd, 2021 are approved. We have two bills on our agenda today, but before we get to them, pleased to welcome to the committee once again our Acting Commissioner of Commerce, Grace Arnold, to discuss with us an overview of the individual and small group health insurance market. Commissioner Arnold.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson, Chair Stevenson, and members of the committee. I have a few slides to share, and I have with me Peter Brickwitty today to hopefully run the slides, and he'll be sticking around to answer questions. This is the presentation. Looks good. Last time we, the slides got really excited and started flashing a lot. So that luckily has not happened this time. So thanks for inviting me today. For the record, my name is Grace Arnold. I'm the temporary commissioner over the Department of Commerce. I'm here today to give you an overview of the individual and small group insurance markets in the state. So I'll start by describing which parts of the state insurance market or state coverage landscape the department, along with our partners at the Department of Health, regulate. So you'll see this graph, which I'll note is a compilation of a couple of sources and so is illustrative. There about a third of Minnesotans get their coverage through public programs, Medicare, Medicaid, a variety of other programs. About a third get their coverage through self-insured plans. Those are, for the most part, large employers that choose to take the risk of their insurance coverage on their own. So most of the large employers in the state would have something like this. We don't have regulatory authority over those plans. The federal government does. And then just under a third of the market is under the purview of the two departments. Fully insured group is split into large employers and small employers. That's under 50 and over 50 employees. The individual market has about 4% of the population is on the individual market, and that's approximately 160,000 people as of October 2020. And as of those people, approximately 70% purchase coverage through MinSure. Further breaking that down, approximately 55% of those consumers who purchase through MinSure receive federal premium tax credits to help with the cost of their premiums. Next slide, please. All right, so I'll start by talking about the overall market itself and then get into what that market means in terms of coverage. So the individual market serves Minnesotans who purchase insurance for themselves or their families through MinSure, through insurance agents, or directly with a company. At Commerce, one of the responsibilities we have for the markets we oversee is market stability. So two ways that we measure that are in rate changes and availability of products. You'll see depictions of both of those here. The average rate changes in the table on the left are the rate changes we announced in 2020 for the 2021 plan year. You'll see modest changes compared with previous years. I'll note that COVID-19 did not have a significant impact on 2021 rates. And these changes have been similar. The last couple of years have had sort of similarly low levels of change, which is a sign of stability in the market. The map on the right shows the choice of plans that consumers have throughout the state. So this is the first year that all Minnesotans have had a choice of two carriers, and in most cases they have choices of a variety of plans within those two carriers. The map, the color, I'll just note that the colors on this map don't correspond to like 1, 2, 3. They correspond to the specific carriers. So you'll see that yellow area, folks can choose from Blue Plus, Medica, and UCare. So anything in yellow has those three carriers as an option. Next slide, please. All right, so I wanna talk about premiums and in particular, benchmark premiums, which set the subsidy level in the individual market. So the subsidy level is set by something called the second lowest cost silver plan. So it's what it sounds like. It's the second lowest cost silver plan in each county. That is the amount of tax credit, that's the amount that a tax credit that an individual can receive is based off of. Here you can see several metro area examples of that premium. So if you went on to MinSure and sorted by the second lowest, by silver, this is what you would see in each of these areas. Rates, generally speaking, reflect the underlying cost of delivering care in a particular area. And in many cases, for many folks, affordability is still a problem, both for premiums, which are shown here, and out-of-pocket costs, which I'll cover in subsequent slides. So individual and small market plans are categorized by metal level. Bronze is the least generous. Catastrophic is the least generous, but those are only available to a certain set of people. Bronze is the least generous. That means that generally speaking, the plan will pay for 60% of the costs and the individual pays for about 40% of the costs. You'll see that about half the market in MinSure is on a bronze plan. A silver plan, the individual would pay 30% of the cost. Gold plan is 80%. And there are platinum plans, but there are none currently offered in the market. Those pay 90%. They conceptually exist though. On the right, you'll see a table that shows what that coverage might look like. So for a bronze plan, you could expect to pay just under $6,000 in deductibles. So you're on the hook for the first $6,000 or so by yourself or on your own, your coverage would kick in and then your maximum out-of-pocket cost would be $8,500. I'll note that the metal levels are set out by federal law as part of the Affordable Care Act. Next. Great, thank you. One note about the previous slide, we don't have the small group data because it's non-public. So that's the publicly available data that we have. So MinSure enrollment, anyone who is eligible can, or anyone can apply through MinSure. This shows an age distribution of enrollees. So you'll see the bulk, almost 40% are folks 55 and older, and then relatively even shares down to age 26, and then fewer people in the lower age categories. Next slide, please. All right. So I'll move now to the small group market. The small group market does have a few more plans or companies that are that offer plans. At least six health insurers offer throughout the market. These are rate changes again. So this is what we look at for market stability. There are the rate changes are relatively modest, and that's what we've seen over the last couple of years. Both signs, you know, availability and low rate changes are signs that the market is fairly stable. You'll see here the premiums for a comparable second lowest cost silver premiums, which are comparable to the individual market, although for the small group market, they don't set a subsidy level. You'll see that the premium dollar amounts are similar between the individual and small group market. So finally, I want to talk quickly about the family glitch, favorite term of mine. So this is a longstanding issue that's not unique to Minnesotans, but and actually my brother was in this situation. So the if you there's an affordability standard within the Affordable Care Act, which allows for individuals to which sets it at, you know, what is an affordable premium and then allows for subsidy beyond that. For families in which a single person is offered coverage at a low rate, but the rest of the family is offered coverage at a very high rate, the individual coverage may be determined affordable, and that's what determines whether or not they're eligible for subsidy, but the family coverage is not affordable. My brother's wife's coverage was 10 bucks a month for her. It was 500 bucks a month for the family. That's the kind of offering that would get you in the situation. So fixing that glitch is something that is currently being discussed in some of the federal packages. And so we're watching that closely, but does represent an affordability problem for Minnesotans. So that's my overview of the market. And of course, I'm happy to provide my team's contact information if you have any follow-up questions, but I'm happy to take questions.
Okay, and we do have two members who are asking, they have questions. I know Mr. Brickwitty is available for questions at this time. The two, after we get through those two members, we are gonna move to the bill. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Commissioner for being here today. Madam Commissioner, just two quick questions for you. Number one, you stated that the markets are pretty stable right now. How important is reinsurance to the stability in that marketplace right now?
Commissioner Arnold. Sure.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and Representative O'Driscoll. Reinsurance was a good tool for stabilizing the market when it was unstable. I think there are, now it becomes a question of affordability. The market has stabilized. I think reinsurance is certainly, you know, partially helpful in that, but I don't think it's the only thing that stabilized the market.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Madam Commissioner, another question for you. How important is actuarially sound plans to being able to deliver ongoing healthcare or reimbursement for healthcare services through the public and or private market?
Commissioner Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and Representative O'Driscoll. I'm not sure I understand the question, but what I'll say is that plans submit their rates to us. We evaluate the rates for reasonableness and then approve them based on you know, whether or not they're reasonable. So the assumptions that, you know, we look at the assumptions, we look at, you know, how assumptions are comparing kind of across the market. So, you know, in that sense, you know, having rates that are reasonable is part of our statutory obligation.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just one more follow-up on that. Commissioner Arnold, I know that you have experience in the health insurance industry before you came to the department, and I think that's very helpful in today's conversation. The other, I guess, follow-up that I have with you is, you wouldn't approve a plan that you didn't feel that the assumptions were solid and stable and would put the participants in that plan at risk. Am I safe in saying that? I realize it's a broad statement, but I think we can agree that that would be something that the department would try to shy away from in its consumer protection, correct?
Commissioner Arnold.
Representative Stevenson and Representative O'Driscoll, yes, one of our obligations is to have solvent plans that can pay the claims. And so, you know, we keep that very much in mind as we're approving rates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Commissioner.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was actually kind of a similar vein of question, just noting that there was improvements in several areas, you know, in terms of that every region now has two providers and things that we saw gains. But my question was going to be around, you know, we saw that there were some gains in areas that made the outlook better. But in terms of cost, you know, will we need to have a different set of tools in order to actually delve into the cost issue, and just any comment about that piece?
Commissioner Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and Representative Olson. So as I mentioned in my presentation, the insurance premiums and out-of-pocket costs are largely driven by the underlying costs of care. And so, you know, the department doesn't set the rates that insurers contract with providers. And so we don't have control over that. We have, you know, we approve rates that are reasonable given the underlying costs. So I think your question is in part asking, are we dealing with the underlying costs? Do we need to? And I think yes, you know, there is an affordability problem, and that's one of the things driving the affordability problem.
Representative Olson, any follow-up there?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner Arnold, for joining us today. Appreciate your willingness to set some important context as we move to our first bill on the calendar today, House File 11. I will move House File 11 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health Policy and Finance, since Representative Schultz is not a member of the committee. But Representative Schultz, welcome to the Commerce Committee for the first time this year, and the floor is yours to describe the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 11 is a bill that basically expands on a successful program, Minnesota Care, that our state has had since 1992. Just as a reminder, it was created by a Republican, or it was supported by a Republican governor with bipartisan support in the legislature at the time. Most of it is funded from the federal government, and the state funds about 5% of the program. And it helps low-income Minnesotans have health insurance coverage and get timely access to health care. So what House File 11 simply does is expands coverage to several groups of individuals in the state. As you saw from the commissioner's slides, there are 4 to 5% of our population that goes without coverage and access to health care. The first group that it expands coverage to is undocumented immigrants or undocumented non-citizens in the state. This is a group of individuals who work in Minnesota, who pay taxes in Minnesota, and who don't have access to health care except through the emergency room, which is really expensive care. So it would be prudent for our state to invest to make sure that undocumented non-citizens have access to health care at an affordable price, and so they get the best care, they can continue contributing to our state's success. The second group that it expands eligibility to are individuals in the family glitch, as described by the commissioner. These are policies that are very expensive through an employer, and individuals are not eligible to go on to the MNsure and get tax credits. So this would expand coverage to those individuals who cannot afford their coverage through their employer. The other groups that are covered are individuals who are self-employed, farmers, those in the gig economy, and small businesses with 50 or fewer full-time employees. And as you saw that right now, it's an affordability problem. You saw most individuals on the individual market are opting for the bronze plan, which has a deductible of almost $6,000 and a 35% coinsurance. Most people don't have the funds to pay that deductible and are not getting the care they need. And this is what we refer to as being underinsured in the market. So what this bill does is tries to expand coverage to those individuals who don't have insurance, and it increases the affordability of that coverage so we can get the care to people that need it. The goal is to maximize and leverage federal funding. Many states right now are exploring options. I want to make sure that Minnesota is ready to leverage federal funds to expand coverage to the uninsured and to those who can no longer afford their care, their insurance coverage. So that's the goal of this bill. And I'm looking for your support, and I'm happy to stand for questions on the bill. And we do have testifiers on the bill. Also, Chair, I do have an amendment, the 8-8 amendment. It's a technical correction to some of the language, and then it establishes an enrollment period, which was a Republican amendment brought forward in the last committee, and I worked with Representative Schumacher on drafting this amendment. So that's the 8-8 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Schultz, and I will move the A8 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you'd like the committee to consider it. Any discussion to the A8? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the A8 amendment is adopted. I think now would be a good time to move to public testimony on the bill. I do have a list here, but I don't know, Representative Schultz, are some of these testifiers part of your bill presentation that you would like to call out, or should I just go through the list in the order that I have it?
You may go through the list because it's not in front of me.
Okay, sounds good. The first testifier on the list is Cindy Vanderpool.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. My name is Cindy Vanderpool, and I'm from Chippewa County. Together with my family, we operate a 320-acre family farm and meat company, Pastures of Plenty. We raise hogs, cattle, and laying hens, all of which we direct market to co-op stores and customers around the state of Minnesota. We are fortunate that our product was in demand in 2020 due to COVID-19, but with that, we ran the risk of being exposed to COVID-19. With the number of people that we are in contact with every day. And we did contract COVID-19. That just added to our everyday fear of someone getting hurt, just doing chores like moving cattle or working with hogs. When you work with a 350-pound sow and her litter of piglets, there's always a chance that she will feel that you are threatening her piglets and she will turn on you in seconds and try to hurt you. Over the years, we have lived in this fear that something could happen. Someone could need to go to the emergency room, or worse, need to be in the hospital. Right now, if this was to happen, we'd run the risk of losing everything that we hold so dear, our farm. Over the years, our family has qualified for Minnesota care, but as our children are growing older and moving on, we do not qualify anymore. When you farm, you do not take a lot of money home because most of it goes back into making improvements into your farm operation. We have looked into health insurance for both Josh and I, but it is $1,800 a month, and that is almost everything that we take home a month from the farm. So that is why we didn't have health insurance for all of 2019 and 2020. We felt that it was smarter to put any extra money we had at the end of the month into a savings account and hope that we never needed to use it for a health issue. We found out in December that we did qualify for Minnesota care because of our low income in 2019. But I will tell you that when we file our taxes for 2020, we will not qualify for health insurance again. And we will be back to praying and hoping that no one gets sick or hurt every day. So please support the buy-in bill for health insurance so that families that work hard every day to put food on their table and maybe even your tables can relax and do the thing that they love to do, be a family and farm. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Vanderpool, for that very compelling testimony. Very much appreciate you sharing your story with the committee. We did, I want to let the committee know and the testifiers know, we did ask the testifiers who signed up to limit their testimony to 2 minutes, which Ms. Vanderpool definitely did. I forgot to reiterate that before the start of the testimony, and I like to do that at the outset. So thank you again. And the next testifier on the list is Teresa Dorsey Mice.
Hi, I'm Teresa Meese of Honest Home Inspection in St. Cloud, Minnesota. My family was one of the many casualties of the financial collapse of 2009. We lost our business and found ourselves unhoused with a baby. With a lot of hard work and the help of state services, we were able to eventually get back on our feet and start a handyman business. We graduated from MA to MinCare. MinCare was possibly the best insurance I've had in my life. I'm a second-generation business owner. My parents had high deductible, low coverage insurance, so the rule growing up was that we couldn't go to the doctor unless there was a significant injury or dire illness. This conditioned me, as it does so many other hardworking business owners, to avoid seeking medical care. As an adult woman on MinCare, I was able to get my yearly recommended exams. Because of my MinCare coverage, I went to the doctor when I needed to. I did not feel compelled to wait and see and suffer from avoidance of care. Eventually, we moved from MinCare to the open market. That was like being pushed off a cliff. The cost of coverage was manageable under MinCare, just under $100 per month with the coverage for 2 adults. But the coverage we could afford on market the next year, even with the pay down, was over $300 a month, plus higher co-pays, no coverage for the allergist, which is a yearly mandatory visit. I found myself delaying medical care again. Speaking once again as a second generation business owner, I will tell you that I've never understood why health insurance should be tied to employment. The small business owners, who are lauded by many as the backbone of our economy, a lot of us can't afford to care for our own health. If you want folks to be bold entrepreneurs, that means that you're also asking us to literally risk our lives to create businesses and jobs. Hearing the stories from other small business owners has moved me deeply. We come from many industries, but we're all passionate about the work we do. Now we need you to do the work that you were called to do. You, in your capacity as public servants, must choose to expand access to MinCare. The citizens of Minnesota work hard, but we shouldn't be paying for our work with our health.
Thank you very much for that testimony. Our next testifier is Carolina Perdomo.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today to speak on behalf of my family and Copal. I am here today to talk about how difficult it has been for my son and for me not have an insurance, health insurance, because of our immigration status, and to urge you all to support HF 11, the Minnesota Care Expansion Bill. Our experience has not been easy. Since we don't count with a legal status, we are not eligible for health insurance, even though my husband has been a resident for years, and now he's even a citizen. But he cannot include us in the insurance provided by his job. He can't include us because we need a valid social security number with proof of our legal status. We've had to visit community clinics and low-cost clinics for our regular checkups. If we need to visit the dentist, we have to pay a lot of money when they do something to our teeth. For example, 2 years ago, My son got injured. He got injured playing soccer on the high school league, and he needed to go to the hospital and do some x-rays. But because of he doesn't have any health insurance, we needed to pay a lot of money just for the x-rays. And as a woman, it is hard to have my checkups on time, because the community clinics makes you wait for an appointment to become available. And I also have to pay if I have to go to a laboratory. If for some reason we have to go to the emergency room, I can't imagine how much we will have to pay. And now with this pandemic, it is much more worrying to think that if someone gets infected and becomes dangerously ill, we won't have insurance to be attended. So this has been our experience as a family, and I'll be happy if things change for the well-being of our community. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity.
Well, thank you very much for testifying to the committee today. The next testifier is Dan Dwight of the Minnesota Business Partnership. Mr. Dwight.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Dan Dwight, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership. The Minnesota Business Partnership is a membership organization consisting of business leaders from Minnesota's largest employers, and we employ more than 500,000 workers across the state. Minnesota ranks near the top in the nation for healthcare coverage. We should be proud of our wealth of healthcare providers, but costs for consumers and employers have been growing at an unsustainable rate. Healthcare costs for families, employers, and the government are causing undue budget constraints. While we support Minnesota Care as it currently operates and appreciate the aim of this bill, we believe a private market-based approach is a better solution for reining in escalating healthcare costs. House File 11 will potentially destabilize an already fragile individual health insurance marketplace that offers multiple coverage options in all parts of the state. We worry this approach will lead to cost shifting to private pay patients, leading to higher and higher health insurance premiums for those who depend on coverage provided by their employer or if they're on the individual market. This bill may put healthcare access at risk for many Minnesotans, especially in greater Minnesota, as healthcare providers cease operations due to unsustainable public program reimbursement rates. In closing, we pursue patient-centered market-based solutions for controlling cost increases in healthcare delivery that increase access and patient choice. I'd really like to thank Representative Schultz for engaging in this discussion because it's very important. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for your time and consideration today.
Thank you, Mr. Dwight. Sorry, I misplaced my list. The next testifier on the list is Ryan Bataldin. Mr. Bataldin.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, thank you. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ryan Bataldin. I'm a fifth-generation farmer in southwest Minnesota. All our land is certified organic. I'm married with three children. I've had type 1 diabetes since I was 16. And so even when I was in my 20s, I couldn't do the risky thing and not have insurance at times like a lot of younger, healthy people do. So I've always paid in to have insurance. My monthly premium is, for many years, has been far higher than my mortgage to own my house. And that's just the premium. That's not copays, and that's not meeting the deductible. I would much rather spend some of that money on buying land or buying farm equipment and investing in my business. I mentioned that my wife and I have three children. Even though we've had health coverage our entire lives, we still had to go on payment plans with the hospitals for each of our three children. Each took on average about 2 years to pay off. Please support this bill. That's why I'm here. And I just wanted, the biggest point is that my monthly premium is so much higher than my mortgage, and that just seems backwards to me. I'd like to invest in my business. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bedell. I agree, that is backwards. The next testifier is Dan Andreessen of the health plans. Mr. Andreessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the trade association representing Minnesota's seven nonprofit health plans. Our members offer plans in the individual market, and many operate as managed care organizations for state public programs. We've had several meetings with Representative Schultz, and we appreciate her reaching out to have a dialogue on this bill. We appreciate the addition of language in Section 6 to fix the family glitch, which is a significant unintended problem facing Minnesota families. The council also supports the Minnesota Care Program in its current form and the benefits it provides to those just outside of eligibility for medical assistance. However, we are concerned with this proposal that would have a negative impact on the Minnesota Care Program by increasing the cost to the state. We're also concerned about the potential negative impact to the individual and group markets because Minnesota Care is not a comparative insurance product to those on the commercial side. Minnesota Care is a state-funded program managed by DHS. It's not subject to the same level of regulation as commercial plans. For commercial products, the health plan takes on all the financial risks to make sure these products are solvent and can pay all claims. This is why plans have reserves, so that claims can be paid no matter what. Expanding Minnesota Care into the private market means the state will be taking on a greater share of this financial risk. Because of the potential significant impact to the insurance market, we support independent actuarial modeling of this proposal. Although the council continues to be concerned with House File 11, we want to continue to meet with Representative Schultz as this bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Our last testifier is Angela Schwenzel. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Just fine. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Angela Schwenzel, and I own Moon Palace Books, a neighborhood independent bookstore in Minneapolis, and I'm a member of Main Street Alliance of Minnesota. Since we opened our small business in 2012, finding and keeping health insurance for our family has been a nightmare. We usually have made too much to qualify for Minnesota care. And although our daughter sometimes qualifies for medical assistance, the back and forth became too risky, including one time we discovered her policy had been dropped when we were at the dentist's office trying to use it. That's an expensive surprise. Apparently, they thought the change in our income from year to year simply wasn't plausible. So we pay 20% of our income to have health insurance for our family of three, with a $5,000 deductible for each of us. I can't tell you how much I wish that we could invest those funds back into our business instead. As a small business with 10 to 15 employees prior to the pandemic, we've never been able to afford to offer health insurance as a benefit. Most of our employees are on Minnesota care or are young enough that they're still on their parents' policies. Neither of these are actually good for our business. We've run into problems where employees on Minnesota care work too much, many hours, for example, to fill in for me when I was sick. They exceed the maximum income, lose their coverage, and have to pay significantly more for worse coverage. We've lost younger employees when they've aged off their parents' policies and decided that they had to find a position that offered health insurance. Allowing individuals and small businesses to choose Minnesota Care for health insurance would put affordable, quality health coverage within reach for my family and my employees, coverage that we wouldn't have to worry about losing as our income fluctuates. That would allow us to invest more into our business and save me the hours I'm forced to spend trying to coordinate insurance each year. And most important, we could consider providing insurance to our employees for the first time, which would help us keep our staff and avoid the time and costs that go into hiring and onboarding. Please support House File 11. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the testimony for people who have signed up. We'll now move to amendments. There were four amendments filed. Let's start with the A12 amendment, which is, I believe, being offered by Representative O'Driscoll. Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move the A12 and then describe the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A12 amendment to be added to House File 11 this afternoon. And I want to thank Representative Schultz and the testifiers today for their work on this and for their comments. As the commissioner headlined for us today, that without the reinsurance program here in the state of Minnesota, premiums, I believe she said, would be going up by 25%. I am wanting to continue to take care of those Minnesotans right now. Under current state law, we have a five-year waiver from the federal government to do a reinsurance program, and that reinsurance program has been extremely successful here in the state of Minnesota. We had a three-year run on it. It was extended for 1 year last year. We have one more year on this, and I'm also hoping that we can continue that federal waiver so Minnesota can continue to lead in stabilizing and growing markets. And so with that, I would like to, again, have the A12 amendment added so that we have peace of mind for all those folks who are insured right now who are trying to figure out what's happening and how their insurance is going to be affected. Not just Representative Schultz's or Chair Schultz's bill, but just in the Minnesota insurance market in general. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to have a roll call vote on that.
All right, a roll call has been requested. We'll have a roll call. Representative Schultz, would you like to comment on the A12?
I would, thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I think we do need to have a discussion on reinsurance. I don't think it should be included on this bill. I think it's a bill that should stand alone and go through the regular committee process. Right now, the reinsurance bill that we have, or reinsurance we have, you know, the state is paying the claims above $50,000 and below $250,000. So this is definitely also relying on public subsidies to maintain the individual market. And in House File 11, I'm working very hard with the Chambers of Commerce, various chambers, and with the health plans and a whole bunch of other stakeholders to bring together a large coalition to work on reforms that depend on the private market. So under this bill, you'll have private health plans bidding on this larger population to cover, and they're negotiating the reimbursement rates directly with providers. So this is an attempt to work with the private sector to cover more people. And reinsurance is definitely a conversation, but I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment and bring it up as a separate bill.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. And I tend to agree with you that I've been a strong supporter of reinsurance in the last biennium. I think Representative Driscoll and I were both co-authors of the bill to do that. But I agree that it should be a standalone measure. And I agree that we should have a more complete and full discussion of it in this committee at a later time. And so I will be voting against the amendment today, largely on procedural, not substantive grounds. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just respond to Chair Schultz's comment about that this might not be the time or the place to have this conversation. I respect the fact that we're looking at additional options for insurance. I respect the fact that we need to do that, but I also fully respect the need to continue to preserve and provide peace of mind, not only for the industry and the carriers right now who are offering this or participating in this, but for all the hardworking Minnesotans who are currently involved in the plans that are covered by reinsurance. And I was just wondering if Representative Schultz might be able to help me to understand how many state dollars are going in right now to cover claims. Last I checked, and it's been a while, but I could be wrong, but many of those were on the federal waiver dollars that we got that the plan has been able to be self-sustaining without having to put any state dollars in because of the creativity that Minnesota has done and the waiver that was granted by the previous administration to the state of Minnesota.
Representative Schultz, I don't know if you have, this is obviously not, your bill is not having to do with reinsurance, so I don't know if you have reinsurance data at your fingertips.
The goal, Chair, is to leverage federal funding like the reinsurance program does. But if we don't find an alternative, it will be state funds going into reinsurance if we continue doing reinsurance since the federal funds run out. And also we have missed out on some federal pass-throughs during reinsurance that we would otherwise have secured. So there is a cost to the state by doing reinsurance. I'm not against necessarily talking about the language. I just don't think it should be on this bill, especially if you want it, if you think it can have bipartisan support and pass.
And I would add that perhaps the fact that we don't have that data right in front of us now, and it's probably another reason why we should have a conversation on a different day about reinsurance, we can have a more full discussion about it. I don't see any other members seeking recognition, so we will move to the vote. Mr. Brown will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Chair Cotizza-Watum.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
1 second. Representative Barr. Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Daphne.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Haley. Representative Cagle. Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
No.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Farr.
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen.
Yes.
Representative Richardson.
No.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Barr. Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
No.
With 6 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. The next amendment on the agenda will be the A-10 amendment, which I believe is being authored by Representative Haley. Representative Haley, would you like to offer the A-10 and describe it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. The A-10 amendment establishes a tax credit for those who pay an annual premium in excess of 120% of the statewide average premium for the metal levels purchased by the enrollee. The language will help make health insurance more affordable for those who live in rating areas that have significantly higher premiums. This is based off of a bill that I authored last session and something that I have been working on since I came to the legislature. It was even pointed out, I think it was maybe slide 4 in the commissioner's presentation, that particularly in southeastern Minnesota, but in a lot of rural counties in Minnesota, the disparities in health insurance rates on the individual market are pretty extreme. From 2019 rates, for example, Goodhue County for an individual, $482 versus the Metro, Scott County, Dakota County, Hennepin County, et cetera, $300. So in the farmer that spoke, the small business owner that spoke, my amendment would apply to them. Folks that, as they even testified, they don't qualify for MNsure, they don't qualify for the federal tax credits. So this would be another mechanism to help those folks be able to afford their insurance. And while we deal with the significant challenges of different options in Minnesota, this could be something that could provide immediate help. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Representative Schultz, any comment to the A-10?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have had conversations with Representative Haley. I think that is a very good bill. I have always said that we need to even the playing field in terms of tax preferences. You know, getting health insurance through your employer is the biggest tax exemption in the country. So those who get it through their employer get a tax break. Those that buy it on the individual market, not very large tax break or tax credits. I encourage her to drop the bill again this session and get a hearing in the tax committee. I can more than happy to help her with that. I don't think it should go on this bill because this bill does not need to travel to the tax committee. And I'm not supportive of attaching individual bills to the House File 11. So I would encourage members to vote no on the amendment.
Any further discussion to the A-10 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
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 The noes prevail. The amendment is not adopted. The next amendment on the agenda is the A-11, which is also being authored by Representative Haley. Representative Haley, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-11 amendment requires the Department of Commerce to study the 9 geographic rating areas in Minnesota and to propose ways to reduce or eliminate the rate disparities between the geographic rating areas in order to provide additional stability for the individual and small group health insurance markets in the state. I've offered this before. Previous sessions, I had bills that would have required the Office of the Legislative Auditor to do this study. For this amendment to connect it to Representative Schultz's bill, I've outlined that the Department of Commerce would do this study. It might be helpful for members to know that when we originally did the rating areas in Minnesota, the rules that CMS provided states is that you had to establish your rating areas based on your metropolitan statistical areas plus one. So Minnesota has 9 insurance rating areas. The largest covers all of the metro counties, all the way down from St. Cloud and then all the way down to Hastings. If you can imagine the size of that rating area, the population that it covers, and the amount of competition with all of our major hospital systems and healthcare systems in that marketplace. And then think about the rest of the state, smaller rural counties with less population and sometimes older people. So it's not even an actuarial justified distribution for our rating areas. And CMS requires us to meet these criteria, that rating areas need to be actuarially justified, not unfairly distributed. They need to reflect differences in health insurance costs. They need to lead to stability in rates over time. And they need to apply uniformly to all insurers. So I think it is beyond time that the state of Minnesota do this study. And we need to do the study so that we have the information to look at different options and then potentially request a waiver from the federal government. I would appreciate your support of this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Haley. I know you've had this bill in the past. I think it's a good bill. and I support doing that rate study. I am actually working on language in this bill and standalone language on rate studies. So I'm happy to have those conversations going forward on this bill when we work on a study language for this bill. And maybe we can incorporate some of the language, but right now I would encourage members to vote no on your amendment.
Any further discussion to the A11 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. No.
No. No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. We will move on to the A15 amendment, which I believe is being offered by Representative Rasmussen. Representative Rasmussen, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I want to thank Representative Schultz for her thoughtful work on healthcare issues. We are fortunate to have someone with her background and experience in the legislature. My amendment is fairly simple, and it's a good faith effort to remove some of the concerns that I have from the current bill. The A15 amendment requires that those newly eligible for the Minnesota Care buy-in would have to be charged a premium that would be sufficient to cover the costs of claims and also administration of the program. In its current form, House File 11 would allow, if not require, additional state tax dollars to subsidize premiums for the new buy-in population. The amendment also ensures that the federal waiver request would be made so that enrollees could receive advanced premium tax credits to help reduce the cost of their premiums. This amendment will not impact the premiums for those who are currently eligible for Minnesota Care. The amendment results in two primary improvements on the bill. Number one, it protects taxpayers from subsidizing premiums for the buy-in population. And number two, it protects the most vulnerable Minnesotans already on medical assistance and Minnesota Care from potentially having their funding shifted to new public option enrollees. I also think that this amendment puts the bill in closer shape to what the DFL campaigned on, that Minnesota Care buy-in would be funded by premiums and not taxpayers. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to explain my amendment, so I would move the A15 amendment and request a roll call.
Roll call is requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Representative Rasmussen for bringing forth an amendment that is trying to help improve the bill, and for all of your thoughtful work on this amendment, and for your knowledge in the healthcare field, too. I think you're going to be a great contribution to the legislature with your experience and knowledge, and I look forward to working with you, and I'm eager to work with you on this amendment. At this time, I don't think we can support it. I think it needs some work, but I want to work closely with you, Representative Rasmussen. We are trying to take advantage of all the tax credits in my amendment that we brought forward from the federal government. But right now, the federal government will not subsidize undocumented non-citizens, and that's where the state subsidy comes in. And so I think maybe we can work together. And right now, the bill defines full cost premium as the actuarially fair premium based on medical costs. So let's work together on this amendment. But right now, I would encourage members to vote no on it.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rasmussen, thank you for bringing this amendment forward. Couple things, folks. Number one, in our setup this afternoon, I asked the commissioner about solvency of plans and would they approve a private plan that didn't wasn't actuarially sound or that they didn't agree with the assumptions that were on there. I think Representative Rasmussen's amendment is providing that belt and suspenders approach to the folks in the state of Minnesota. More importantly, to the people who are going to be on this plan. We're not just telling them, yep, we're going to have a plan and then it's going to shift or it's going to change or it's going to get out of control. We're going to actually do the efforts that are necessary up front to make sure before we roll out a plan that it is actuarially sound. And so I would strongly encourage a yes vote on the Rasmussen amendment. And Representative Schultz, I agree. I think that Representative Rasmussen is going to be an excellent addition to the legislature. He's a very smart person, and I'm really glad he's with us on Commerce to be able to share his expertise and knowledge and his background in the industry and from the areas that he's had a chance to be exposed to before he came here. So I know that the Chair Schultz doesn't want to have this, but we also know that we can't put a plan out that doesn't work for people. And this is a way for us to be able to start moving in that direction that Chair Schultz wants, for some bipartisan support, by simply making this bill and this plan self-sufficient and solvent. So members, please vote yes.
Boy, I remember a lot more hazing of first-term members and a lot less congratulations of them. But nevertheless, Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Representative Schultz for the offer to work together on this. I look forward to that. I understand that my amendment today is unlikely to be successful. I think it's an important structure to ensure that we protect taxpayers, and that these funds this Minnesota buy-in option is able to fund itself without an explosion of costs for the taxpayers. But I do appreciate Representative Schultz's thoughtful work on this issue and other healthcare issues, and look forward to working with her as this bill travels through committee. So thank you.
Representative Gagel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm just a little concerned about this, because if you were to go onto the individual market and you were between 200 and 400% of the federal poverty level, you would get a tax break. So essentially, we are subsidizing people in that 200 to 400. And so I don't see why we would essentially punish people for limiting their choices, basically. And so, I hope that this is something we can keep working on, but I have major concerns. So thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Cagle's point, federal dollars, state dollars are still public tax dollars that are going in. And I will share with this committee the same thing that I would continually share with them, then MMB Commissioner Myron Franz, when I was working on pension reform and being able to get us stabilized here in the state of Minnesota with our public pension obligations. And from time to time, he and I would have the conversation. I would share with him my concerns that he would have when he goes to New York every year to talk about the fiscal viability of the state of Minnesota with unfunded liabilities and what that could do. I remember the first time we had that conversation, he said, well, I'll take my chances. And he came back and he said, you know what? They were more concerned about this than I thought they were going to be. And so I said, well, let's get this together. I think that Commissioner Showalter now would be experiencing that same thing. There's an unknown bottom where the floor is on this plan as to what public dollars would be in. At least the Rasmussen Amendment allows us to be able to analyze that before we jeopardize anybody and their potential coverage on here. Hopefully, Representative Schultz maybe had with this conversation maybe a change of heart. I might be interested in taking this amendment and working with it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. And closing comments on the amendment to Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the conversation here. To address a concern that Representative Cagle brought up, I actually shared that concern as well, wanting to make sure that individuals who currently don't qualify for Minnesota Care but would qualify for subsidies on the exchange would have access to it. And so that's why in the amendment we included language where we would have to include in our federal waiver request that enrollees could receive the advance premium tax credits, much in a way that Chair Schultz has designed that in her bill to be able to capture those federal tax credits as well. But that's a great concern, and we do have to be careful and thoughtful about that, because as everyone on this committee knows, it's not just the state that's a player when it comes to health insurance, but also the federal government too. So thank you for the conversation today, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would appreciate your support on the 815 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Mr. Brown will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
No.
Vice Chair Cotizzo-Attune.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Barr.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Daphne.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Haley.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
No.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Farr.
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen.
Yes.
Representative Richardson.
No.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
With 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We will now move to general discussion on the bill. Discussion to the bill. Seeing none, Representative Schultz, do you have closing comments? Oh, Representative O'Driscoll, just in the nick of time.
Well, again, with this distance that we're doing here and having to push the buttons and deal with things in a tougher area, I appreciate the fact that we didn't jump too quickly on that and cut off member debate. Thank you for that opportunity, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, I have a question, and I don't know if you have a copy of the bill in front of you and if other members do, but my question is going to be to line 1.13. And my question has to do with, it's under the subsection 3B, talking about full cost premium. My question is, does this paragraph, and specifically where it talks about in line 3, going back to the comma in line 12, where it says, comma, the total revenue would equal the cost of Minnesota care medical coverage and then the full premium to the enrollees. Does that also anticipate and include the administrative costs associated with the plan, or are those just the hard costs for the plan? It's a little sketchy there as to exactly what we're trying to encompass. I'm just trying to figure out if there's going to be additional costs that might be incurred that aren't addressed in this particular version of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schultz.
I would refer that question to House Research. I don't know if they're on this call, but it would be the actuarially cost of medical care, which is used to help with the competitive bidding process in the Minnesota Care Program. We can clarify that at the next committee stop to address your concerns and add language about the full cost of coverage.
Representative
Chair. Randy Chun with House Research.
Mr. Chun, actually, why don't we give House Research a chance?
Sure. I'll just mention that this language in the bill that we're talking about, it's a variant of some language from some years back when Minnesota Care allowed children to stay on the program even though they exceeded the program income limit. So this is the full cost premium language that those children would have to pay. The language from some years back did also have separate phrasing related to administrative costs. That's not in here. So it may be better if there's interest in including that in the calculation to add some reference to administrative costs.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand Representative and Chair Schultz is wanting to move this bill on and maybe address that in another committee, but this is the only committee that I'm on. I think that this bill will have a committee stop before it moves to Health and Human Services and on its way to others. And since this item is clearly, I think, within the jurisdiction of the committee, I'm glad that Mr. Chun was able to provide some clarity for us that it's rather ambiguous at this point. So Representative Schultz, I'm going to ask you to address that concern and as peer-to-peer, take care of that in the next committee stop to shore up that language. And Mr. Chair, what committee is this being re-referred to after this committee stop?
Representative Driscoll is being referred to the Health Committee after this stop.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, you cut out. Zoom is not
done. I apologize. I said the Health Committee, Representative Driscoll.
Okay, there's multiple health committees, Mr. Chair, so I'm just kind of wondering which one it's going to be referred to.
The big one, the Health Finance Committee, Representative Liebling's committee.
Mr. Chair, all due respect, I think they all think that they're the big committee over in Health and Human Services.
I thought mine was the big committee.
See,
well, yours is the Human Services Committee.
See, I told you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
But I will also ask then Representative Schumacher to watch to make sure that that happens. Not that I don't trust you, just that he's also aware of that concern that we brought up in this committee. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And trying to still get in the habit here of lowering the hand right away. So thank you. And Representative Schultz, thank you for the bill and the conversation. And I just want to give a shout out to you. I really appreciated the email. I think it was yesterday or even Sunday that you had sent out. I'm presume you sent it out to everybody, but I responded to you just letting you know and committing to you. I would absolutely have an open mind in the bill today. But the thing that you opened up the comments with, and I have the bill here, were the expanding the coverage to illegal immigrants. Right. I mean, right off the bat, that's what your opening presentation of the bill language was. And that is just something I can't support. But I'm not sure why we continue down the path of those who make choices to break the law. And then we here in Minnesota continue to pass policy or attempt to pass policy that ignores that fact and just treats everybody as if they have not broken the law. And that's just something I can't support. And I, you know, when I was listening to this, I heard words such as affordability, stabilization of the current. And then I heard one person say, and I absolutely agree. So as a real estate agent, as somebody obviously in the real estate industry, I think the comment from one of the testifiers was monthly premiums should not be higher than the mortgage. And another comment along the same lines was that they would like to take the money that they're spending on health insurance and instead reinvest it into their business and to grow their business. As a small business owner myself, I absolutely get it. I'm right there, and I wish I could do the same thing. But the fact is, and I know every year that ticks by, people are going to forget this fact, that pre-Obamacare, pre-ACA, for many of us, we didn't have our health insurance more expensive than our mortgages. And I know that there are people right now that at the time they weren't adults, but they're now adults, or they were young adults and now they have families and they're more cognizant of this fact. But for those of us who were alive back then, we remember before the federal government got involved to the degree that it is today, insurance premiums were much, much, much lower. We didn't have premiums of $1,800 a month or $1,000 a month or deductibles of $10,000 and to that effect. It was way lower. And I am concerned that we continue to have a solution that more government involvement is going to drive down the price, when I think it's just the opposite. The more government continues to get involved, the more detached we are, especially with the bill language, as Representative Rasmussen, I think it was, brought up with his amendment, that there's not an attachment between the cost and the risk and the premium that's paid. There's no association there for certain levels. And we need to keep that in mind when it comes to insurance. When there's risk and cost involved, there absolutely it needs to be associated with the cost. And to detach that is to create incentives not to make wise choices. And then lastly, Mr. Chair, I guess I actually have this illustration. I don't know if it's coming across. I copied over it with black pen. This morning in another committee, we were talking about housing. And I look at it as an equation. On one side, you have costs when it comes to building. On the other side, you have housing expenses. The entire conversation was on one side of the equation. And I'm holding this up because it's the exact same conversation we're having now. It's that there's an equation happening here. We have medical costs and mandates on one side, and then we have insurance premiums on the other. And what we continue to see with these solutions, many of the solutions, is just focusing on one side of the equation. Medical costs continue to go up. That's what we need to focus on. The mandates we continue to put on should be our focus, which will then have an impact on lowering the premiums and insurance expenses to the consumer on the other side of the equation. So for these reasons, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, again, I do appreciate, unfortunately, I can't support the bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. And with no other members seeking recognition, Representative Schultz, I don't know if you have closing comments or would like to respond to.
I have closing comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lucero, I appreciate your comments. I wish you could take my health econ class so we can talk about the real impacts of the Affordable Care Act and how it provided insurance to almost 20 million people. But you're right. We do have to look at the healthcare costs. That's what's driving our health insurance premiums. I would love to work with you to figure out how we can lower or reduce the cost growth in healthcare costs. It's a big problem. And until we solve that, we're going to continue to see premiums escalate and be unaffordable, even to those who have employer-sponsored insurance. But I want to thank our testifiers today for the bill and their support of the bill. I want to particularly thank the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Minnesota Catholic Conference for endorsing the bill because it covers undocumented non-citizens, the Land Stewardship Project, the Minnesota Budget Project, the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and many others who I'm working with. I'm putting a lot of effort into bringing a large group, a large coalition together. So I really appreciate my Republican friends having an open mind, and I really want to work with you to get bipartisan support so we can make reform, but also so we don't lose out on federal funds that other states may get if we're not ready. I think our state needs to be prepared to offer some coverage to cover those who are uninsured. So I really want to have my Republican colleagues work with me and improve the bill and help me get support in the Senate. So thank you again, Mr. Chair and members, for supporting the bill. And I look forward to working with you to improve it and to move it forward.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. We'll now vote on the bill. I will renew my motion to recommend that House File 11 be re-referred to the Committee on Health Policy and Finance. Mr. Brown will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative or Vice Chair.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Daphne.
Aye.
Representative Elkins. Representative Haley.
No.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Lislegarde.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
No.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
No.
And Representative Elkins.
In a result that the Katiza-Watun household is particularly enthusiastic about, with 10 ayes and 7 noes, the motion prevails and House File 11 is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Health Policy and Finance. Thank you, Representative Schultz.
Thank you.
Our next item on our agenda today is House File 330, the author being Representative Greg Davids. And it's my great pleasure to welcome back to the Commerce Committee Representative Davids, a former chair. And I think as he and I discussed, this is our first biennium in the Commerce Committee without Representative Davids in some time. So it's a great pleasure to have him back in the committee. I believe we are going to have House File 330 considered today, act on an amendment, and then we'll lay it over as Representative Davids continues to work on the bill with some stakeholders as well. I know Representative Richardson has been very involved on this issue and is going to be working on it as well. So I'm hopeful that they can work together as the legislative session continues. So with that, I'll move to bring House File 330 before the committee and recognize Representative Davids. Perhaps it might make sense to take the amendment first. Is that agreeable to you, Representative Davids?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And I think Representative Katiza-Watun, you may move the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Okay, the A1 amendment, and if you could briefly let the committee know what the A1 amendment does.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A1 amendment removes the misdemeanor, which has a limit of a $250 penalty, whereas the existing civil law penalties in licensing have a cap of $1,000 of liability. So essentially, the civil penalties are more than the misdemeanor would be. So just we're taking that out of the bill.
And Representative Davis, any comment to the A1 amendment?
No, I just want to thank the representative for moving the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Any discussion to the A1? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? And the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And now the floor is yours, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Tito Attune for that amendment. I think it makes the bill better. And thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman, working with me on this bill, trying to make it a better bill. And I'd also like to thank your staff for all the work they did to put this together. The legislative staff, minority and majority, both, I think, are put through some extra work here. They should not go unnoticed, Mr. Chairman. Okay, what House File 330 does, as amended, it establishes purchase and sale requirements for catalytic converters and cut down on the recent rash of catalytic converter theft. One of the TV stations, I guess it's Carrot 11, had an article that Minneapolis catalytic converter thefts are up 456%. The St. Paul Police Department said preliminary reports show that it's up 208%. The reason that I'm not pushing for a vote on this bill today is because all parties, I've been working with various parties, we're not there yet as to where we have the Davids coined term peace in the valley. We're not there yet, but I just want to bring this bill forward today and to let the committee know that I am working, especially with the Scrap Dealers Association, to make something work. Because what happened here is this is kind of an offshoot of the 2007 bill that we did on a bipartisan basis when there were tremendous copper thefts. And so we're kind of designing this for catalytic converters over that. We put a lot of responsibility on the scrap yards, the scrap dealers. And I just want to make sure that we get them on board before we move this any further. So thank you for your attention to this matter. I stand for any questions. Otherwise, if we could lay it over for another day, that would be very good.
Thank you, Representative Davids. We do have two testifiers to speak to the bill. The first testifier on the list is Lance Klatt. Mr. Klatt.
Hey, yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lance Klatt, Executive Director of the Minnesota Service Station and Community Service Association, representing over 400 independent auto repair and petroleum retailers in Minnesota. My organization supports House File 330. In speaking to a few of my auto repair members, the theft of catalytic converters is more problematic than most think. On average, it costs a consumer anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 to replace their catalytic converter. People are stealing catalytic converters, as you know, for the precious metals inside of them. I'm hearing thieves can make anywhere from $200 to $400 for each catalytic converter. As for a Mitsubishi or a Prius catalytic converter, can fetch up to $800. In order to replace a Mitsubishi catalytic converter, a customer can wait up to 4 months due to the demand. A majority of auto repair shops store vehicles overnight in their auto repair bays inside the facilities. However, most repair shop owners will not allow a vehicle overnight in their lots, inconveniencing their customers in fear that a theft of the catalytic converter may happen. As noted from a few instances, however, some thefts have occurred in the parking lots of our auto repair facilities, creating an uncomfortable conversation with the customers, explaining to them their catalytic converter was stolen and are told as to return this misfortune of theirs into their insurance companies. According to one of my other repair facility members in St. Paul, catalytic converter thefts are creating more stress within their communities than there already was due to recent unrest, while increasing everyone's insurance premiums. Yes, we support House File 330, as anything can help deter catalytic converter theft, more importantly, make our communities safer rather than more opportunistic for those creating this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Klatt. Our next testifier is, I can say, you know, without any bias whatsoever, and I think Representative Cagle would agree, one of the finest police chiefs in Minnesota. And I don't know why anyone would think that I would have any bias in saying that, but Coon Rapids Police Chief Brad Wise. Chief Wise.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Frankly, I can confirm everything that Mr. Klatt just said. His data is accurate. So I can speak about Coon Rapids, and I can just give you our actual numbers. In 2018, we had 8 catalytic converters stolen in our city. 2019, it was 10. In 2020, it was 46. So doing the math, that's a 450% increase. And so far in 2021, actually through February 1st, we're up to 7. Truthfully, the the kind of theft that it is, there's little risk of being caught, as the only evidence left behind, generally speaking, is metal shavings. Frankly, the criminals that commit this act have little to fear in terms of getting caught. First off, it's a misdemeanor, so it's a property crime, non-person crime. Secondarily, they do it in the middle of the night, and the only thing they have to worry about is sound. The technology for cutting off a catalytic converter is better. The Sawz or a Sawzall that you can purchase at Home Depot has a great battery pack and has ample power without electricity to remove the catalytic converter, truthfully, in seconds if you know what you're doing. And of course, as Mr. Klatt mentioned, there's good prices for the scrap metal. Meanwhile, I took the time, coincidentally, to speak to one of our victims of a theft of his catalytic converter. And he happened to be the owner of a Mitsubishi Outlander. Apparently, that brand is very popular with the thieves for exactly the reasons Mr. Klatt stated. So for this person's theft, which occurred January 8th, he didn't notice the theft that occurred. It could have been anywhere among two different days because he had simply parked his car and it sat with some snow on it for a while. He said he first brought it to White Bear Mitsubishi and found out he would be roughly 80th, that's 80th in line to get his catalytic converter replaced. So instead he went to the Brooklyn Center Mitsubishi where he found that he was only 30th in line to get his catalytic converter replaced. And they told him he can expect to wait until April or May until that new catalytic converter came in. And it would cost him somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000 because of oxygen sensors and so on. That said, he is making an insurance claim. So again, as Mr. Klatt stated, it's an insured loss, meaning all of us bear the cost, unless you're one of the unfortunate souls who does not have that kind of insurance on their car and they're left with an out-of-pocket expense. Or worse, they're making repairs, especially our low-income folks are making repairs on the car on their own, and they're completely omitting reinstalling a catalytic converter, meaning that it no longer has the device that helps protect our environment from the gases from exhaust of a vehicle. So that's just a snapshot on what's happening in Coon Rapids. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Chief Wise, for sharing that perspective. Appreciate it very much. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill author, thank you for your willingness to leave this bill in committee until we get it right and moving it along. That's kind of the spirit that we've always had in the Commerce Committee. And one follow-up question. Chair Davids, if memory serves me right, you are very actively involved in bringing about the reinsurance program here in the state of Minnesota. Do you anticipate that this bill will also require a reinsurance program at some point in the future, Mr. Chair?
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Obviously, in the health area, if we don't pass reinsurance, the market collapses. I don't think we're going to need a reinsurance bill for this. I hope it doesn't go that far.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Davis for that insightful conversation.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and former Chair Davis. I'm super excited about this bill, and Representative Richardson's been talking about it as well, so I'm excited to see us get this over the finish line. It's a Mr. Klatt and Chief were really articulate on what's going on over here in the East Metro. The same thing, City of Maplewood, just it's a wave. It's and the weight. I have two people in my life with the Mitsubishi problem, and it's long. The other thing that they didn't mention is that, you know, these folks don't get a rental car or something. They're carless. I mean, just think about that. If you're with a one-car family or something, you know, I thought insurance would cover that, but apparently it doesn't. But again, I would encourage just actually the opposite of what Representative Driscoll is saying. I'd like to see us move faster and pass this early in session and get this over the line and help Chief Weiss out there and give them tools, you know, to get this done and have it right. It's a bad deal. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll throw this question out to anybody who might be able to answer if possible. I'm just wondering, with the catalytic converter, is there any age difference with the cars in terms of some that might be more vulnerable versus less vulnerable? If they're older than 10 years, that the difference in the metals of catalytic converters in the past was making them less attractive, or is every car equally vulnerable?
We'll see. Chief Wise, I don't know if you have a perspective, or Mr. Klatt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, actually, I think one of the biggest reasons for the increase, first off, is the increased value of those precious metals. Therefore, you're making more money for somebody selling for scrap. But truly, I think it's a big deal that you can buy a Sawzall that's battery powered and it has sufficient power to just cut it off. And I think people are figuring out how easy it is, that it's a property crime without much fear of consequences. You rob a bank and make $500, you risk 10 years in prison. You make $500 cutting off a Mitsubishi catalytic converter, you're gonna get a citation in the mail. And I think that it's an incentive. And unfortunately, the consequence on the car owner is far beyond the value of the property that's stolen.
Mr. Chair, it looks like Mr. Bright.
Yep, and you beat me to the punch there, Representative Lucero. I was muted, but it does appear that Neil Bice, did I get that right, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Scrap metal recycling industry, you're on the call. If you could just state your name for the record, and then you can go ahead and answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Neil Bice. I own a company called CW Metals. We're located in Monticello, Minnesota. We are a procurer of catalytic converters. Most of the catalytic converters we are buying are from end-of-life vehicles, and we are buying them from other car dealers or dismantlers throughout the state or throughout the region. But to answer the question from Representative Lucero, the age of the vehicle, it doesn't matter. The amount of precious metals are relatively similar as they were 30 years ago. In fact, the cars 30 years ago had more value in them as perspective of today based on the amount of rhodium they have in them. Rhodium is not a common element used today in catalytic converters. And the value of a catalytic converter is driven by metals markets, or precious metals markets in this case. It's the value of platinum, palladium, and rhodium. Those three metals are what are the active ingredients in a catalytic converter that deal with the emissions issues that we all have in our vehicles. So to give you some depth into that, today, rhodium was trading around $22,000 an ounce. These are unheard of prices. And similar to the copper issues we had 10 years ago with the copper theft, when copper gets to $4, somehow thieves start to target copper. We're getting to those days again, unfortunately. These metals markets, as they improve with the economies that improve, we see these thefts sort of stem up. But and also, I just wanted to add quickly that I really appreciate Representative David's taking the time to reach out to industry and including us in a conversation so that this gets crafted in a manner that helps law enforcement and gives them the tools, but also minimalizes the risk or the burden as it is on the industry and trying to help you guys gain information and facts related to these crimes so that you can prosecute. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bice. I'm going to turn to Representative Davids now for closing comments because we only have a couple minutes left in our hearing time. Representative Davids?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank all the testifiers. And the main point of this bill for me is not to go after the scrap metal industry. Minnesota already has tight restrictions on them, whether it be photos or all the record keeping has to be done. So what a thief can do is cut off a lot of catalytic converters, put in the back of a pickup and go to Wisconsin where there's very little regulation there. So I want to get this right, and I look forward to input from members of the committee, from people involved in the industry. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this and laying it over.
Thank you, Representative Davids, and we will lay over House File 330 for further consideration. A brief housekeeping note before we adjourn. There was a technology issue during the vote on House File 11. Representative Elkins attempted to vote, but couldn't have his voice heard. He was able to connect with staff and would like to vote aye. And so we will record his vote as aye as we continue to adjust to our remote hearing procedures. So that would be an 11-7 vote on House File 11 as corrected. And with that, the Commerce Committee will be adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you.